Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction again to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. This is 13, and in 12 I told you that that 12 was going to start a recap, and the recap would be very long. And 12 was very long, but 12 got cut up. It was too long, and I didn't like it. And we did something, decided to do something on 12 that I thought I would do on 13 or 14, and that is just basically talk about one solid ideal through the whole thing. And that's basically what I did, to keep it down to a two or three ideals during a segment and keep it under 50 minutes so it's not too mind-boggling long. But what we will do in this one is we will continue on a recap. And so in the last one, I told you it was going to be the longest one. It was the shortest. It was most concise. Typically on these, I spread around and I grab a few different ideals and I go over a few different ideals. You know, you get a lot of people that, these white rabbits out there, they want to hear, you know, there's usually something in each one of these for everyone. But as we go on, there'll be recaps and I'll go deeper and deeper into certain ideals and concepts. But on this one, we're going to start by recapping Wordism. Then I'm going to do Around the World with Horace. And I'm going to talk about all the big machinations with Russia. You're kind of seeing a few of those, aren't you? And Israel and Iran. I've been talking about that with you more than just a little bit. But I'm going to go around the world with Horace, and we're going to go over some news events as they happened. And then I'm going to end by talking about something called contamination. And something that happened in the indigenous white rabbits of Europe and their struggle. And most people didn't understand why it happened or what it happened for. And I'll go into that, the New Orleans Protocol and contamination, as I define it. But we're going to start with Wordism. And I'm going to read a piece, William, on Wordism and White Nationalism. And this is September 6, 2009. I'm stealing this from the blog because that's what I'm going to do. That's what I tell you to do, steal ideals. Anything to help out the indigenous white rabbits of Europe and their struggle. And that's what the blog's there for. Recently, I stumbled across a Stormfront thread asking the question, can non-Christians be white nationalists? I thought the answer was simple enough, but it appears people are much more delusional than I realized. In this thread, I saw bickering, arguing, and childish name-calling, but really, what more could one expect from Stormfront these days? No, this isn't what got me interested in this thread, in even writing this. What sparked my interest was a sentiment that despite one's genetics, your religion can dictate your race. This astounded me that people would believe this. Religion is an ideal. People's loyalty to this ideal do not change their racial makeup. If I start quoting the Quran, the Irish blood in my veins isn't magically transformed into Arab blood by the will of Allah, and yet this is what people seem to be implying. I took this as something of a call to arms. I tried to explain that this was simply idiotic and goes against the every fact about race we know. Someone's race cannot be changed. Their DNA lasts with them for their lives and is furthermore passed on to generations. Once adherence to an ideal, whether it may be Islam, Christianity, paganism, atheism, democracy, communism, socialism, or even white nationalism, doesn't change their genetic makeup. As I put it, if a full-blooded Irishman named Seamus O'Brien walks into a new mosque down the street and declares the words of Muhammad to be the will of Allah, can someone please explain to me how he is anything other than an Irish white man? The fact of the matter is simply this. An Irishman is all that he is and all he will ever be, regardless of what ideal he clings to. His race stays the same. Now, the problem develops that by adopting the new ideal, this new ideal, his race takes second place. In our example, Seamus now identifies as a Muslim, not a white man or an Irishman. His culture, folk, nation, and family have all taken a backseat to the newfound ideal. This is insanity and serves a huge problem in recruiting Seamus for any kind of racial belief system. He has a new group, a new set of peers, a new law code, a new history. Underneath the turban, Seamus is still the Irishman he's always been, but he's now a slave to an ideal that is Islam. Anything short of race is just that, an ideal, an abstract thought, a concept. And by clinging to an ideal, you lose any sense of racial obligation. Now, after I made this point, I was immediately attacked. Apparently, there is a line that once one crosses, you get your status as a white person revoked. Again, this is just foolish. This issue of white youths who act like non-whites, and that is, as a white nationalist, being loyal to these people was bad. It is bad to be loyal to people of your own race, Isn't this cornerstone of white nationalists? I then realized that what we know as white nationalism is nothing more than an ideal. It's just as prone to wordism as any other ideology. And in fact, all it is wordism. These white nationalists refuse to accept their fellow whites because these youth's ideal, that of multiculturalism and diversity, clash with their ideal of white nationalism. So in effect, what we've learned is not even white nationalists can think racially, but rather in terms of my ideology versus theirs. Now I'd be the first person to stand against multiculturalism and diversity. These are two sick and evil things. They are, after all, white genocide. But these things are just ideals. They are silly ideals that require some form of insanity to believe in. That said, to exclude whites who believe this and somehow insinuate that they are less than white is just idiotic and stupid. This may seem like common sense, but to the good people, and I use this sarcastically at Stormfront, I just made the greatest sin of all, the realization that the world of racial politics is simply a microcosm of a greater struggle beginning to set in, that these people will cling desperately to their ideals, their books, their flags, their personality cults, and be the first to ship their race up the river. What's wrong with this picture? Pro-whites who are against whites simply because of their ideals clash with their whole religion of white nationalism. That is William on white nationalism and wordism. And remember, wordism is any time a white rabbit puts an abstract ideal in front of their organic identity. It doesn't matter what the ism is, it'll always end up the same results. If only we believe these words to be true, everything will be okay. Well, it doesn't really matter whether it's multiculturalism or white nationalism. Now, white nationalism might be a lot better in certain aspects, but even that is prone to wordism, isn't it? Even that's prone to divide and rule. You know, you got this white nationalist group arguing over whether Jesus had blue eyes or green eyes, ready to go to war with this white nationalist group who is atheistic or something. You see, that's typical wordism, Protestantism, Catholicism. It's the same thing. But what you're seeing is it's coagulating into wordism. And the indigenous white rabbits of Europe do this. It's very racial. No other group in the world really does it quite like we do. You know, you got the anti-racists out there trying to, like Jane Elliott, with her blue-eye, brown-eye thing, trying to persecute little white kids. All she's doing is doing what she accuses her ancestors of. You know, instead of force converting the Indians into some form of Protestantism, she's force converting the natives into some type of anti-racism. And instead of burning the little red-haired girls alive for being witches, she's trying to burn the little blonde hair, blue eye kids alive for being racist. It's not really any different, is it? No, it's something our race, it is racial, we go through. But recognizing it is a big step to solving the challenge. But if you're putting any ism above, and I don't care what it is, above your organic white rabbit identity, you will end up suffering. And you will make everyone around you suffer, even the non-Europeans. You know, there's going to be 25% that legitimately want to live in a New York, L.A., or a big multicultural city and multiracial, but it's not much more than 25%. And if they're putting that ideal ahead of their white rabbit identity, their organic identity, they're going to be miserable. It doesn't really matter that they're crazy to like multiculturalism or whatever. You know, different strokes for different folks. Every group, I've already went on through this, every group has this 25% that wants to be in those cities that loves multiculturalism and stuff. But that is a good example of Wardism setting in and white nationalism. It's segmenting, and they're ready to go to war for their different idealism, for their different abstract principles as it applies. You know, if someone's not a Christian white nationalist, well, they can't be a white nationalist. Now, that's something our enemy, especially when you start dealing with the ADL, the SPLC, they'll grab a hold of. You know, they'll come and join the Christian white nationalists and try to charge against the atheist Nazis. Use your imagination. But if you can control Wardism, once you see it for what it is, once you bring your existence down to a healthy organic identity, and once you just start at the basics, me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit, well, everything else will go away. But until you do that, it's just nothing but suffering. And that's what we've seen for centuries on this stuff, especially during this dark, ugly time in humanity. Our race has done some brilliant things, but that's just a mere candle of what we can do and what we're probably doing behind the scenes. A mere little flicker, a flicker of light that we've seen come through since the late 1600s. But Wardism tends to hold us back, doesn't it? Sure, it tends to keep us non-grounded. Where, you know, you become detached. They say when the water is polluted, you go back to the source and you draw fresh water. Going back to me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit, going back to a healthy organic identity, even if you like something multicultural, even if you like eating at Chinese restaurants, nothing wrong with that, you still, unless you have that healthy organic identity, you're going to end up suffering. It doesn't matter whether it's communism or even the latest stage of environmentalism. It's all prone to the same thing. You're going to force convert the natives into your environmentalism, and you're going to persecute the white people who don't go along with you. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's the same mindset. It's a disease. It is within itself very racial, because we are naturally religious. Doesn't matter whether it's environmentalism, or doesn't matter whether it's white nationalism or Nazism or communism or Protestantism you can make up Umbeschlugism. There we go. I just made up one, and it'll become a religion to some whites. Animal rights has that, right? It can become a religion, but just recognize it. Take a step back. Go back to be a white rabbit, you a white rabbit, and put it in perspective. There's nothing wrong with environment. There is something wrong with environmentalism. There's nothing wrong with white national, wanting to be a white national, or wanting white rabbits to have a home. There is something wrong when you make it into an ism and you're willing to go to war because you don't accept white nationalists who are not Christians. That's fair. You're going down the same road. You're going down the same road. You're suffering. That is suffering. And now we're going to transition and talk about some different news events. We'll call it Around the World with Horace. And then again, I'll end up on talking about contamination. Now we're going to do an Around the World with Horace. I guess that's what we'll call it as we shape up. As we came into late August, early September, we have massive news events happening all across, right in front of everyone's, right in front of everyone's face. I mentioned Afghanistan. I thought we were coming out of there, or at least I was repeating Democratic talking points and didn't know it. Yeah, we're not coming out of there, or actually, no one really knows. The Wall Street Journal, the road home from Afghanistan, why a flexible timetable to withdraw U.S. troops will best advance our national security interest. That was a standard Democratic stuff by Russ Feingold, and that's August 28th, 2009, Wall Street Journal, the opinion journal. Well, no one really knows what's going on there fully, but I will let you in on something. We have more troops in there right now. According to Congressional Research Service report, and you can probably Yahoo that, Congressional Research Service report, as of March of this year, the U.S. had like 52,000 uniformed personnel, but another 68,000 contractors. Well, that's a lot of troops. That's about 120,000. The Soviets at the height of the Soviets' occupation of Afghanistan was 115,000. And the more troops you add in, the worse it gets normally. That was the last go-round. This could be a little bit different for one particular reason. And let's move on to the next news event. I'll read headlines to you because I've been talking about this stuff sometimes in a roundabout way, sometimes very directly. Russia seeks Afghan role as NATO deaths climb. This is Bloomberg Online. That's Russia seeks Afghan role as NATO deaths climb. And that's September 2nd. So these are rolling out right after another. Russia's talking about using the Russian-NATO alliance to go in there. Now, if you start talking about 120,000 of our troops in there, and that includes contractors, who knows what's really in there? If that's according to some congressional research report, who knows what's really going on? But if you start talking about Russia coming in there under some new NATO agreement and really pounding the place, and getting uber medieval, uber being giant, big and medieval on them. Who knows what they could do? Who knows what they could stir up? And who knows why? You know, I'll constantly be asked, why are we in Iraq? Why are we in Afghanistan? I don't fully know. I don't like wars. The only connection I can give you between the two, and there is a connection between Afghanistan and Iraq, that connection goes back thousands of years, thousands and thousands and thousands of years, back to the beginning of this age when they were dominated by Aryan tribes. Yeah, that's the only connection I can give you. You can talk about the drugs, you can talk about the oil and everything else. Those are all excuses, and those are all true. There's all kinds of drug trades going on in Afghan. There's all kinds of oil and potential natural resources in Afghan as well as Iraq. But there are also ancient Aryan stomping grounds, aren't they? Afghanistan being an ancient Aryan territory. Why? I don't know the precise reasons. But if Putin, which kind of shocked me, if Putin goes in there, it would tell me probably that he's gotten a lot of what he wants in whatever negotiations ensued between him, Anglosphere, and that they made enough concessions that if he goes in there, he's not going in there for no reason, because he doesn't do anything for no reason. He typically is not interested in war, although he can go to war. But if he goes in there, it should be pretty interesting. I don't really know, other than it's out there, and watch the Afghanistan. Maybe they need that for something going on in the particular end game. I don't know. We can only speculate. And then, of course, we got the Discovery Institute, the Russia blog, Natural Allies, NATO, Shanghai Corporation Organization, and Collective Security Treaty Organization. Now, the CSTO, the Collective Security Treaty Organization, that's a Russian organization, and that's kind of like a mini, Russia's mini NATO outside of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and that includes groups like Armenia. That's how they sell those weapons to Armenia. They're in that CSTO. And they did a report on that on August 26, 2009. So that's all shaping up right in front of our face. We're hooking up with Russia somehow behind the scenes on some level. That is rather obvious. And we'll move on to the next one. And this is by Zbigniew Brzezinski, a Russian hater. And this is August 19, 2009. So this kind of preceded that. NATO and world security. And he goes from being a Russia hater to being very practical on Russia. And he can be pragmatic, generally speaking. It looks like for this old Polish person from Polish nobility, he seems really pragmatic all of a sudden. And it basically is a piece in the New York Times. An op-ed he wrote. Mr. Brzezinski was a foreign policy advisor to Jimmy Carter. He was also... interesting enough, helping Obama prior to him being elected. He is notorious for his statements on Israel, against Israel, and he typically doesn't like Russia. It's probably a Polish thing, but they're talking about engaging Russia in a wider web of global security that indirectly facilitates the fading of Russia. So what we see here is a large engagement in the media of okay, we're going to get together with Russia, and then all of a sudden we see different things happening immediately. NATO sees positive signals in Russia relations. Well, yeah, deals are cut. When you get stuck, you cut deals. And that's Friday, August, sometime in late August, early September. And then, of course, NATO is hooking up. And then we move forward, and so we have some kind of agreement with Russia. What it is, I don't know. Obviously, they're not going to do anything for their own. They're not going to do anything bad for themselves. And of course, most of you have noticed that Obama hands Russia a gift, supposedly. Well, he didn't hand them too much a gift, but what he did do was get the missiles out of their face. You see, what our enemy was trying to do in reality, not that Obama's necessarily our friend. Remember, we're not happy until we get a home. Yeah, we still have this weird situation where we don't have a home. We have the whole top of the planet, but we don't have a home. But we had a situation here where someone was trying to put missiles in between white rabbits in Eastern Europe and white rabbits in Russia. Why? Because they're trying to hold back a Russian-German axis. That's not good for white rabbits. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe want a Russian-German access because that immediately solves a problem of a home, of a legitimate home for white rabbits in case of a disaster or whatever. And when you start dealing with the economies of Anglosphere, you know, giving out all your these crazy banking schemes that Anglosphere pulls and things like the Federal Reserve and what's going on in America in the last 50 years. Well, we need a home and we need something a little more stable because it is very unstable economically. So that's illogical. Russia's debt-free. Germany still has a manufacturing base and they have massive tracts of land. If you start looking to the east, you have massive tracts of land. That's just common sense, a massive natural resources. It's a match made in heaven. And also the Italians are on that. It's a Russian-German-Italian axis. It is coming together. Our enemy wanted that. They want a Europe full of Yugoslavias, full of little war zones that they feel that they can control and use to try to destroy our race thoroughly. We don't want to give them that. And so by them taking out the missiles, what it does is it allows white rabbits to come together because a lot of the young Poles are not, doesn't matter whether you're Ukrainian, Polish, they realize that Russia, you know, they're not interested in having missiles in their backyard. A lot of their elites are, a handful of their elites are. Why are the handful of elites in Poland interested in that? Well, because they're not our elites. Yeah, but we don't want that. We don't want anything, missiles ever in between white rabbits trying to come together. Kind of makes sense? Yeah, we don't want it to. And a bird in the hand is better than a bird in the bush. So if the Russian Germans are going to get something going, it ultimately won't be bad for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. Yeah, they're not, the people behind the scenes in Germany, I don't like some of them, but the fact that they're willing to go through with something like that is very, very good. Long-term, intermediate-term, whatever. It also does something. It immediately breaks the back of certain parties in Anglosphere and puts them at the table. And that's what's happened with Israel, in my opinion. So Russia was handed a gift by Obama after going through all these machinations with NATO and trying to help them out. Interesting to see how this develops coming into the end game. And of course, Russia, you know, says that they don't want any war with Iran, and they probably don't on their level. There's been a lot of scheming and a lot of different stuff that I don't have a perfect read on. I just know the general trends, and that's what I've been calling out to you in this general trends, which is much more important than what's going to happen on this date, because if it goes down, it's going to be rather obvious. But the general trend is toward we have some kind of cooperation with Russia, even if it doesn't look like it at times. And I don't know how it's really going to end up. Does that mean there aren't certain parties that would like to send us against Russia? Yes, but even if it looks like we're going against Russia, we're not, in my opinion. And as we shape up into what's going on in the Middle East, and what's going on in the Middle East is, of course, a lot of the current stuff has set with a Russian boat in the Arctic Sea. And a Russian boat in the Arctic Sea was hijacked. You can look it up. Russian ship hijacked in North Atlantic. And there's a lot of mystery behind it. And the crew was recovered. I'm guessing it was like Cape Verde Islands. Russia recovered the crew. And I will tell you that many governments like the UK, United Kingdom were on nuclear alert and all kinds of stuff like that. And the conspiracy websites, one conspiracy website, Northeast Intelligence Network, put out the classic conspiracy is Russia setting the stage for a nuclear apocalypse. Well, they would have done it long before that boat incident. So the Russians recovered their cargo, whatever it was, the Russians did something. And some said it was the Mossad hijacking it, or the Mossad trying to hijack it, and the Russians recovered the crew in Cape Verde Islands. Or something like that. The general scenario is Russian got them, and Russian got them back. Russia got the crew back in Moscow. No one's been allowed to interrogate them or talk to them. What is interesting about this crew, what I can tell you, is that one or two of the members had been legally dead for 3 or 4 years. So that's kind of interesting. Those Russian rabbits are so clever. They're raising white rabbits from the dead. The true nature of it, I don't know, but it sure did cause an international storm. Netanyahu disappeared off the scene for a couple days, and he went and talked to Russia, and they've been bent over backwards negotiating over something, probably their lives, because Russia can trigger anything with Iran, even without really moving, by just slipping the Mickey somewhere. I've already talked about that. They can cause chaos with one little move. And there may be some parties and angles for that want them to do that too. You know, if they get together on a large scale, well, they can do anything. You start talking about elements in the military industrial complex and you know, somewhere like America getting together with like-minded groups in Russia, look out. Look out, it's helter skelter. But what we're seeing are the machinations of something big getting ready to occur. I thought most of the stuff that I'm seeing now would be seeing early next year or at latest next fall, and that maybe this would happen next summer and I'd have a lot of time to talk with you, yada yada yada. What we're seeing is someone has sped up the timetable. And any time there's a speeding up of the timetable, that's because our enemy has capitulated. It's not because of us. It's not because of anything bad long-term for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. That's my reading on it. Anytime I see my enemy having to speed up their timetable, it's because they're panicked. That's good. But something obviously went down, and what they're saying is that Russia was trying to ship nuclear weapons to Iran. Well, it was probably a false flag, if it was anything. They're false flagging. They're setting up scenarios. They're making in-game negotiations. They're stoking fear across the board. They're doing all kinds of different things. And Russia's being used. Russia's doing this. Whether the actual Russians know it or not, they're doing some very brilliant things, obviously. But in my mind, that was a false flag. They're not going to ship weapons to Iran from the Arctic. It ain't going to happen that way, because they would most likely already have it. Anyone that knows a map of Russia knows that Russia has some new territories now in Georgia. Russia also has Dagestan. Dagestan borders Azerbaijan, and Azerbaijan borders Iran. And Armenia is right there, and Armenia borders Iran. Russia has a common waterway. The Volga River, you know, the Volga River empties into the Caspian Sea, and the Caspian Sea is right there. So Dagestan, the Caspian Sea, Azerbaijan, and then Iran, and Russia's right there. So if you look at a map, they can ship to Iran pretty easily many different ways. They don't have to take an Arctic route. That looks a little too sneaky. They were probably setting someone up, setting something up, or, you know, who knows. But in my mind, if Iran has said that if sanctions take hold, that Russia still can supply them with gasoline, still supply them with all the gasoline they need by rail. Well, if Russia can supply Iran with gasoline by rail, and they can, probably through Armenia or whatever, or down through Dagestan and Azerbaijan. They don't have a good relationship with Azerbaijan or Georgia, especially not Georgia, but they don't have a great relationship with Azerbaijan, but it doesn't matter. They can ship down the Caspian Sea, but what I'm saying is it's very close. Their borders are very close with Iran. So they got many ways to do that. If they can ship gas, and they can ship gas via rail, they can ship anything else they want to. Gas is a lot harder to ship than weapons, in my opinion. Takes a lot more planning. But anyways, they most likely already have whatever Russia's setting up. Now, might Russia endgame Iran and squeeze them into acting? or squeeze a huge catastrophe, war catastrophe in the Middle East, like the conspiracy theorists are talking about? Well, yeah, sure, they can do anything. They can do anything. Israel's going to have to go to war. That is World War III. Israel will have to go to war. Now, whether it's like Bret Stephens and the Wall Street Journal on September 15th, 2009, opinion, global view, and this is, let me make sure it is Bret Stephens, Obama's pushing Israel toward war. So you have, that's a title of a Wall Street Journal thing. You know, he's got three options. One, he can let Israel attack, which will be disastrous. They may do that, though. Two, he can do the neocon option, that is get America involved and let America do it, which wouldn't be so ugly, but man, it would make us hate it. Or do it somewhat together, which is no different. It's no different if America does it alone or if America does it together. If, however, he sets back and lets Israel go, it will be a disaster. It will pull us in, and it will be a total catastrophe. I can't see anything good about it at all. Is there a fourth option that something is well coordinated to trigger this World War III type thing? Well, sure, that's always a probability. Is Russia playing a huge role and in all this? Sure. So is Obama, whether he likes it or not. Obama's never talking for himself any more than John McCain would be talking for himself. John McCain would try to go to war with Iran outright and get us involved outright. In other words, Israel sit home and we're going to defend you, the type of thing. Obama's is giving Israel fits because he's sitting cool. Brzezinski has just said and caused a firestorm, saying that if they catch planes flying toward Iran, they're going to shoot them down. You know, a reverse Liberty. Liberty was a boat that Israel, they say they accidentally attacked, a U.S. boat that they accidentally attacked and killed a lot of people on board during, was the 60s or something, the USS Liberty. You can look it up. But he was saying that you might have an incident of a reverse Liberty, of Israel tries to attack Iran and we protect Iran. Well, certain elements don't want this World War III because it's going to be a disaster, and I don't know. I don't know. The different machinations are hard to read. The trend is very easy for me to read. The trend has been there for a while. I'm guessing we're going to wake up one morning and they're going to have gone at it, and it's going to be ugly. But you can't do anything about that. But let's look at another one. Netanyahu plays the Russian rope trick, and that's Asia Times, Middle East, September 15, 2009. They're talking about him going there in secret and trying to cut a deal to make sure the Russians don't sell the Iranians S-300s. The problem for Israel when it comes to Russia, you can do deals with Russia, but Israel is the number three weapon supplier on the planet. Number one is U.S., number two is Russia, number three is Israel. Israel supplies more weapons than anyone in the world other than Russia and the U.S. Israel has supplied many of Russian enemies, especially Georgia. Israel supplied Georgia with weapon systems right up until the actual war, and then they cut back on the last-minute tank deal or something. When it looked like Georgia was going to lose, that has caused Israel problems. Israel's being very presumptuous to walk in and tell Russia not to sell defensive weapons, which are totally legal under international law. Remember, international law is in place. An S-300 is a defensive missile system to protect nuclear plants in Iran. What they don't want is for them to sell the S-300, because if Russia sells the S-300, or if they already have it, that makes an actual Air Force attack by Israel very, very difficult, if not impossible. So what Israel's asking is something very presumptuous. They're asking them not to sell weapons which will basically make it difficult, if not impossible, for Israel to attack, which is illegal under an international law to begin with. You know, the Russians are complying with the international law, but Israel's saying, look, we might have to attack them, so please don't sell them defensive weapons. And of course, Russia wants, or Israel wants, the crippling sanctions. what'll happen, I don't know. As of this date, we're on September 22nd, 23rd. I don't know what's going to happen at the UN. My guess is that U.S. is going to back out of it, and Israel is going to go it alone or do something. That's just my guess. It'll be ugly. It'll be disastrous. And that'll trip off the beginning of the end game or whatever. Whatever you want to call it. But when it comes to Israel's relationship to Russia, it's been difficult because the Russians always point out that Israel has never really, they're selling weapons against them, they're not doing good things. And by the way, Russia's used that to get some technology that maybe Israel got from the U.S., different types of little spy planes and whatnot. And they're using this to pull negotiations, and Israel is bending over backwards to negotiate because they're pulled over a barrel. You see, our relationship with Russia is everything because we don't have an Iranian problem, we have a Russian problem. Iran can't do anything without Russia. Iran cannot do anything without Russia. Iran can't do anything without Russia at all. So if Russia will not act, let me give you an example. If Russia holds up the Security Council at the UN and won't act on Iran, well then guess what? You can't do anything. You can't get sanctions against Iran unless Russia acts. Russia, and even if China could throw it up in the air, but you can't do anything against Iran without Russia. You can't talk about Iran without Russia. You can't, because Iran doesn't have any power. Iran is being used as a proxy to some extent, and Russia, of course, has built up. They built up an enemy. They built up an enemy that's a thorn in the side of many groups in Anglosphere. Of course, Brzezinski would just go in there and cut whatever deal the Iranians want to cut, but it may not be so simple. It may not be so simple, but it's a thorn in the side, and Russia's not willing to take out that thorn, or at least they haven't been up to now. But if they've gotten everything that they want, maybe they'll subside a bit. Maybe it doesn't matter. But again, you can't be too definitive because I'm not in the back room, and it wouldn't matter if I was. It's just a trend in place. It's not if it happens, it's when, and how ugly it is. And Russia is moving into position. Yossi Melman, this is in Haaretz.com. This is an Israeli newspaper. Just recently. 9/16, September 16, 2009. Pleased to Russia over Iran just humiliate Israel. Very upset about Russians going around on bended knee to the. I mean, Israelis going on to bended knee to the Russians, and the neocons hate that. They hate this because it's humiliating to them. They thought they had Russia broken in half, and now Russia comes back, and basically Russia holds their whole entire survival in their hands. And all they have to do is sneeze across the Middle East, and the whole thing goes up in flames. And I've discussed this. They have many ways to go about doing it. The Russians, and this piece says, the Russians say they will not sell offensive arms to Israel's enemies, only defensive ones, if at all. Therefore, they see Israel's demand that Russia's refrain from selling weapons to Iran and Syria as presumptuous, especially when it comes to a deal involving the sale of S-300 surface-to-air missiles to Iran. Why does Israel want to stop this deal? Because these weapons will make it difficult to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, and that is exactly what Russia's foreign policy aims to achieve. Because it makes it difficult. You can't go around attacking people under international law. It's kind of funny. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, Israel sells more arms in the world than Russia right now. Interesting enough. I don't know the actual numbers, but you get the. I may be off on one little fact when it comes to the actual numbers of Russia or Israeli arms sales, but they all sell a lot of arms to each other's enemies. So telling Russia not to sell arms for defensive purposes to Iran doesn't really hold much water when Israel sold Georgia and who knows what else weapons for offensive capabilities against Russia. Russia, they'll listen to them and then just sit there and hem and haw. Do I think something's getting set up? Yes, I've said this all along. Something I don't know exactly what. I just know the direction, and it's going to be epic. This is an interesting news piece that slipped by in The Guardian. Russia deploys anti-missile defense unit near North Korea. Interesting. And that's a big S-400 system. The S-400 system is very, very advanced. It can hit stealth targets. It can hit anything. And so Russia is cooperating somewhat. They're preparing the board across the planet. And that's all you can do is watch the news events and be somewhat prepared, as good as you can be prepared to this. But we're going to transition now. I don't really know what else to tell you on that other than to be prepared. You know, don't worry. I'm not really looking to, I'm not worried about doing, a lot of these guys are these patriot groups and whatnot are looking to defend themselves to the teeth and whatnot. You know, this type of thing would have been pretty well planned, and you don't want to ever do anything crazy. The rabbit that keeps her head is the rabbit that doesn't lose it to begin with. So the last thing I'm interested in is running around doing anything crazy with a gun or anything else. You just let the situation evolve in front of you and keep your head. My thinking is whatever happens after this event, whichever way it looks like it's going, is not going to be the how it ends up. So no matter how bad it looks, or if it looks like all hope is lost for an indigenous white rabbits of Europe, don't worry about that. You know, stay, take it one step at a time. And I'll go into this more in 14, because we're going to go back into some stuff in 14. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But we're going to have to talk about Russia and contamination. Right after September 11th, we had an interesting incident, September 11th, 2001. The neocons were allowed to crack down across the board, but to do so, they had a big challenge. The Islamic groups were all combined, but they weren't combined. They were like the Sinn Féin and the IRA. You know how Sinn Féin has a political wing and the IRA is an arm wing, and P. O'Neill is the famous signature of the arm wing, and they put out a message and... But there is contamination between the two. The two are linked. The Muslim groups are like that a lot. You'll have a charity, and Hezbollah will support the charity. And then you'll have a political wing. And that political wing will have ties, little threads, tying it to the military wing. We've seen this all the time. But you see, after September 11, 2001, they had to crack down. They had to go after them. Well, to go after something like that, you got to put a broad net. You got to say that any type of contamination, any thread connecting any group anywhere else, it's open season. And they did that to go after a lot of these Muslim groups. You know, they confiscated all different types of charities that were just connections were may have been dubious, or maybe they would have been legitimate by one person. But that's what I call contamination. Anytime any type of political group has any type of contact at all with any type of violent wing, whether it be terrorism or whatnot, it doesn't really matter. Hezbollah, Hamas, whatever, any type of contact between them whatsoever, and there always was, becomes contamination. But to go after them, you got to really do something over the top and wild. You know, it's got to be like those rules they use to go after mobsters and RICO. You know, guilt by association type of thing. But that's what they put in place, the State Department and whatnot. And they went wild, seizing assets of these Islamic groups all across the planet. But when they did that, when they went over the top, well, that sets a new stage for a new problem. You see, groups like Soros, Soros was very upset about that, George Soros. And he was singing like a canary this was going to cause huge complications for Anglosphere and for his group in Anglosphere in places like Chechnya and Russia, because all their human rights groups and so on and so forth are what? Well, yeah, there are threads tying them to different struggles, violent and whatnot. But guess what Russia did? Russia cracked down across the board and said they're all terrorists. Well, by the way, China was allowed to do that too. So it's like the U.S. got to make an over-the-top rule, and they did it. But in doing that, it set off a whole new chain of events. And Russia went wild, shutting down human rights groups with little threads contaminating them, connecting them to little terrorist groups or little violent struggles or whatever. It also allowed anyone to do problem, reaction, solution. and set off a big challenge. Let me give you an example of how that could work. Let's say you create a problem within in North America right now. You have these different Aslander groups. La Raza, very powerful, funded by the government. La Raza is a pretty much a Mexican supremacist organization. I don't have a problem with them, other than the fact that they're not in Mexico. You know, if you're a Mexican supremacist organization in Mexico, I don't have a problem with you. If you have a Mexican supremacist organization in America, well, that's not going to be good for you long term. But again, they are easily contaminated because one violent incident of any group that they're connected with, and they're going to be connected with all kinds of nutballs on the fringe because they've been allowed to go wild with this. There's been no crackdown on La Raza. Maybe a little crackdown on some of the Aslanders by the neocons that got worried about things, but not really. You could go problem, reaction, solution. In other words, there's a problem. There's a new violent group does something stupid one day among the Mexicans in Texas or California. There's going to be a huge public reaction. You're going to walk out with a solution, and they would be treated no different than Hezbollah or Hamas. So you could be stripped of your assets overnight. Why? Because they're easily contaminated. You cannot be contaminated in any way, shape, manner, or form post-2011. You cannot have your political wings or any type of violent revolutionary talking whatsoever. Sinn Féin did something that no one thought it would ever do. They basically pulled the plug on the IRA. Now, they could always get them going again, but they had to do it. They didn't do it because they wanted to do it. They did it because they had no recourse. And no recourse. There's new rules on the globe. And when you new rules on the globe, you got to play by those rules. But you can pooty-poot it. You can play by them under your standards. And that's what Russia did. And they did it. They'd still do it. Oh, they're terrorists. You're funding terrorism. They're connected to funding terrorism. You can go anywhere you want with that. But they had to set up such a wide dragnet. The neocons did something very stupid on a geopolitical level. They set up a lot of their problems across the board just by going over the top and acting stupidly in the short term, which was kind of interesting. But the reason I'm talking to you about this contamination, because you probably most of you don't think in these terms, is that most of your groups had to do something too. Many of you have heard of the New Orleans protocols. And Dr. Duke, when he got out of jail, I guess he was in jail for some kind of tax something or other, and who knows? I'm sure everyone listening to this could be thrown in jail for some kind of tax something or other. Maybe did something wrong. Maybe screwed up 20 years ago. Maybe it's just he's innocent, and the path to the castle goes through the prisons, goes through the prison cellars, as they say. But anyways, whatever happened happened. I guess he's went on the record about that. But Dr. Duke brought out the New Orleans Protocol, and thank God someone did in 2004, because we'd have trouble to this day if they didn't. It's a zero tolerance for violence, honor and ethical behavior in all relations, no enemies to the right type of thing. Maintain a high tone of arguments and public presentations. You have to do that. You have to come out with a zero tolerance for violence. You have to do what Sinn Féin did to IRA. Now, in America, it was pretty simple, and in Europe, was pretty simple because you have nothing but either the politicos who are out front talking, preparing the groundwork for practical politics, and then you have the undercover lovers, the steely-eyed lone wolfers, as they call themselves, sitting back, and they don't go to the meet, greet, and eats. Thank God, there's nothing wrong with that. You got to keep them separate. Don't have anything to do with them, but you got to set that standard, zero tolerance for violence, because if there's any contamination at all, you're going to be in trouble very quickly in your group. That's why the New Orleans Protocol had to be done, and thank goodness someone like Dr. Duke could do it, or would stand up and do it, because you take heat from that, saying, oh, you're giving in, the Dukester's giving in, he's not going to cooperate with those lone wolfers. Well, no, it has nothing to do with apples. There's a new game on the planet. You've got to play the game in front of you. You can't play the game you want to play. You got to play the game you have to play to the best of your ability. But you had to have a New Orleans Protocol in somewhere like America where you have the illusion of free speech, and you've got guys walking around running their mouths. You know, if you're going to be a steely-eyed lone wolfer, the first rule is don't run your mouth. And I mean, if the neighbor knows you're a steely-eyed lone wolfer, well, you're not one. You know, if someone knows you're an undercover lover, you're not one. You know, if you reveal your hand, you better make sure it's too late for your enemy to do anything. But anyways, they shouldn't be there anyways. But so in America, I guess you had to make it formal across the board. The New Orleans Protocol set the stage for pretty much most white things all across the white world, which is good. You got to have them separate. Don't go to any meetings. Just stay put if you're an undercover lover. Steely-eyed lone wolfer, because that's not the game going. It's not. You're not going to be playing basketball. Talking about basketball at a baseball meeting is a no-go. It's a no-go. You had to have a formal rule like that. You had to make it stick with someone that could make it stick, or at least put it on record. What it did immediately, most likely, was it said, you know, most of the steely-eyed lone wolfers, the old-timers, said, well, we're not taking Dukester serious anymore, and we're not going to have anything to do with them. Well, that's good. That's good, because you got to be separate anyways. You can't be fooling around with that stuff. You know, maybe they're setting up something on down the road. You can't be hard-headed and run around at some, meeting for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, some political meeting talking about non-baseball issues like basketball. That's a no-go on this planet right now, you know. So that's why the New Orleans Protocol happened. It happened because of contamination. And they were happening across the board. It's not any different than the IRA Sinn Féin. It's not any different from many other struggles. But if there is a contamination, I guarantee you, or if someone can put in, if someone can tie a thread, they can take down a whole organization, a whole crew, a whole La Raza in the blink of an eye, strip them of assets, throw them out. They could do anything they want to do under these rules. The rules are ruthless. And everyone's applying by it. It doesn't matter whether you're in China. It doesn't matter whether you're in Sudan. They're all treating it the same way. And the reason Soros was upset is because he knew that his groups in Russia were going to be treated under the same standard because they're all contaminated. You know, let's face it, it's very easy to contaminate it. The white nationalists, believe it or not, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe have had it very tough over 50 years, so a lot of these groups are so undercover they even want to play basketball. They realize, I can't play basketball today because they have half a brain, so we got to wait to play basketball. We can't talk about playing basketball because it's against the law. So we got to be these undercover lovers, these steely-eyed lone wolfers. So they're immediately segregated themselves, which is good. You can't have that stuff. You can't be like Chechnya, where the you know, you got some hothead, you know, they're talking about secession of Chechnya, the Chechnya Republic, and then you got these hotheads talking about, you know, we're going to fight our way through. Well, it ain't going to work. Russians are going to line you up, problem, reaction, solution. They're going to take down your human rights organizations. They're going to take down everything. And so that's something that happened right in front of your face, and you might not have realized it. The New Orleans Protocol was absolutely positively necessary. Not that separation wasn't already there, because white rabbits have had it tough. But that is the New Orleans Protocol. And one last thing I wanted to say after contamination is that don't ever be hard-headed when it comes to talking points and a particular message. If you have to keep your job, well, by all means, keep your mouth shut. I don't know anything about Don Black, but Don Black's wife worked for some very wealthy family, they're European Cuban, I believe, and she works for them down in Florida, and you know, everyone found out that she's involved, that they're involved in some charity functions in Florida, this wealthy family. And she has a job with them in public relations or whatever. And so, of course, you know, all these New York rags like Gawker.com and whatnot were saying, you know, this is a white supremacist works for, you know, some charity. And she came out and she said that, well, I don't have any, you know, beliefs, racial beliefs or Stormfront type beliefs, yada, yada, yada. Now, obviously, the wife of Don Black is probably not going to be married to the man for that long and not have somewhat a type of racial belief. She's not going to be having white kids or anything like that. But obviously, she's just saying what she has to keep her job. What's funny is that the people that hired her let her keep her job and didn't really care. They just said, yeah, come out and give this standard message. That's what it looked like to me. Come out and give the standard message. No big deal. Please don't go out and say, you know, Hail Hitler. But you got to do what your boss tells you to do. There's a time and a place for everything. There's so many undercover, you know, you've heard of crypto Jews, but what you haven't heard of crypto Aryans, and there's a lot of them out there. Every once in a while, you catch one of the elites saying something wild, like Tony Blair. Tony Blair, right before he joined the Catholic Church, said that they were worried about another Roosevelt coming to America, coming to power in America, and spoiling things. Now, what exactly he meant by that, I don't know. I heard that with my own ears. You know, you got these different things. You got these different channels like C-SPAN and whatnot, where politicals and people in power, people in visible power, will run their mouths, thinking the cameras were off and the cameras are still on. It's kind of funny, but Tony Blair did that, and it was kind of shocking for a lot of people for him to say that. Now, I don't know if you can look that up and find that, but I have friends that have that recorded. Yeah, I have friends in that type of business. They're going to record offhand comments. They used to sit in front of these satellites looking all over the world, and sometimes if you remember these old giant satellite systems, and they're still out there, you turn into a channel and they haven't started broadcasting yet, but they're goofing around on camera and whatnot, and you can catch some off-camera stuff that you're not supposed to see, kind of like on C-SPAN when they let the cameras running and someone says something, or when Obama runs his mouth and he doesn't think it's going to be picked up when he called that little African a jackass or whatever for jumping on stage with that white girl and trying to take her award or whatever. Whatever happened there. I'm just giving you an example. But Tony Blair said that. They didn't want another Roosevelt, which is interesting. Makes you think, what's he about, really? But he's in with Clintons, and you don't know anything about the Clintons. So it should be interesting to see as we come into these huge events across the globe and how it shapes up, but always keep an open mind. Always be ready for anything, and always use your head. And as I go into 14, I'm going to go into something that I said I wasn't going to go into again, because I've been asked a dozen questions. And I'm going to go into something that is a topic that's been in front of you your whole entire life. But you never ever heard anyone talk about it, and you probably never will. It's called negative conditioning. It is something that works on Aryans, but what has happened over post-World War II is a lot of negative conditioning. Shocking. It's just shocking. So for me to talk about the events I got to talk about that I get asked questions on, I got to go into negative conditioning, which is not something I've ever planned on doing with you. But that's okay. I'm going to do it anyways. I'm going to talk about negative conditioning. We're going to talk about World War II and why, why this has never been reconciled and why I can't, you can't get specifics on things until you know how something definitively ends. And I'm going to go into this on 14, negative conditioning, and that'll be out pretty quickly, actually. I'm going to try to get that out quickly. And this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. This is Follow the White Rabbit 13. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.